Hey, I'm Michaela Lafrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Tell me a story. So starts Julia Alvarez's new novel, The Cemetery of Untold Stories. Its main character, Alma Cruz, is a celebrated writer living in Vermont. She's decided to move back to her homeland, the Dominican Republic, with boxes full of unfinished stories. Alma shares many characteristics with Julia Alvarez, who is 74 and lives in Weybridge, Vermont. She was born in the United States. When she was just a few months old, her family moved back to the Dominican Republic. Her father was part of an attempt to overthrow the dictator Rafael Trujillo, and her family fled back to the United States when she was 10. Some of those events formed the backbone of her first novel, How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents, which came out in 1991. Since then, Julia Alvarez has written more than 20 books, novels, collections of poetry, nonfiction, and children's books. She received the National Medal of Arts from President Barack Obama in 2014. She's also a Middlebury College graduate and former writer in residence there. Julia Alvarez, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you, Michaela, for having me again.
It's an honor to have you. And I so enjoyed this book, The Cemetery of Untold Stories. I'm really looking forward to talking about it with you today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, Julia, I'm going to betray my roots as an English major with my first question to you here. It's a little nerdy. Now, a number of your novels, including your newest one, The Cemetery of Untold Stories, are polyphonic. That is, they feature a diversity of points of view or voices that are all woven together. What draws you to this style of writing? Because it's one you've used a number of times.
Thank you for that question. I think it's a very accurate way of describing what I didn't set out to do intentionally, but it comes maybe from my oral tradition in childhood. I grew up in the Dominican Republic, where there wasn't really literary ambience in a dictatorship. I wasn't from a reading family. We didn't have libraries, but we had a rich oral tradition. And in the oral tradition, it is a communal and performative experience, storytelling. And so I've really been interested in that sort of decentralized, non-hierarchical way of moving through story, because it's through the multiple points of views and the many tellers of a story that you get a rich, whole picture of whatever it is that the stories are describing or exploring. So I thought when I went to my MFA program that I was learning all these fancy technical elements of fiction that I had never heard of before. And as I've grown in the craft, I realized that many of the things that I was learning then and have learned in my writing life about character and pacing and humor and, how to create conflict in a narrative came to me in childhood from storytellers, many of them who couldn't even read or write, but they were wonderful storytellers.
Who told you stories when you were young?
Everybody. You couldn't even a family gathering. It just was on and on. And sometimes it was hard to get a story completed without somebody taking it up or revising it for you. But there were everybody, from the aunties to the uncles to the abuelitas to the madrinas to the niñeras who took care of us to mommy, papi. They were just, it was just an oral culture. That was our entertainment. We didn't have TV. Radio was the official radio station of the dictator, and my parents were dissidents, so they didn't want to have that on. So it was mostly, that was our culture, our social media.
Well, you mentioned people picking up on fragments of stories and continuing them in their own way. The book features a number of characters who in sort of a surrealist way, really arise out of these fragments of stories that are they're carried around by the main character, Alma, a writer who has stacks of papers with unfinished novels and stories that she's trying to figure out what to do with. Where did the fragments of the stories that you used in the novel come from? Are they your own fragments that you've repurposed, or did you write new ones for Alma?
No, I think it's pretty accurate to say that many of those fragments exist in boxes in the attic of our barn or down in the basement. and they are fragments, and some of them not even fragments, multiple drafts of novels that never quite came together. And they're there haunting me. Because when you're younger, you say, well, you know, as a younger writer, you say, someday I'll get to that. You promise those characters, someday I'll put you between the covers of a book. And what you realize as you grow older and older is there isn't enough time to do that. So how do you make peace with the lack of closure?
So it's not necessarily a benevolent haunting. They're coming to you and saying, finish my story.
Well, stories have a kind of power, and not always for the good, as we know when we look at some of the things being spun around in this country and worldwide. They have a power, and we hope, as Czesław Miłosz, the Polish poet, said, we hope that they use us, that stories, that poems use us for those spirits that come with them, use us for good purposes rather than evil ones. So, but they have a power, and you have to develop the craft to be able to manifest them, but they don't belong to you, and they have their own power, and also they can haunt you, of course, especially if you don't do their bidding and write them down.
Well, Julia, in the middle of writing this novel, I heard that you experienced a health crisis. Your retina detached from one of your eyes, and you had to have two major surgeries. First, how are you doing today?
Well, first of all, I was in the hands of a wonderful, wonderful retinologist who practices in Burlington, Dr. Weiskel, and he has been a godsend. And I've had to learn to live with what is essentially, especially for a writer, a handicap that I don't really have viable vision in my right eye. It was a successful surgery in terms of its reattachment, but, stuff had happened and inflammations, which gave me this condition. And the left eye is going through its own transformations. In other words, I asked Dr. Weiskel at one point, what can I do? Why is this happening to me? He said, birthdays. We're growing old. It's not just my characters. Their author is as well. So we have to live through the expiration of some of our body parts, and not all of them can be replaced.
Mm. Well, to see the fallibility of this specific body part, your eyes, as a writer and a lifelong reader as well, I'm sure must have been terrifying at times. Were there periods where you couldn't read or write?
Well, when I was, as I got used to it and found trouble and had to accommodate to shorter writing days because the strain was too much and to very slow writing and reading, and for a person who is quicksilver and impatient, that was difficult. It was tough, and I had already started The Cemetery of Untold Stories, but I was kind of in only the first part and kind of thinking that this I would never finish this novel, and it would end up in The Cemetery of Untold Stories. And so when I finally was able to work, it was such a blessing. I mean, I just, when you can't take something for granted, there's a new juice and appreciation for however much you can still have back. And I think that gets in the writing. Because there's a long, long life in the craft, there's a certain kind of staleness that can come in, tediousness, exhaustion, careerism, all that stuff that gets between you and your characters. And this was swept it all away. What did it matter? facing the ultimate, what did it matter? Just give yourself over. And I learned a lot from my character Filomena, who is one of my heroines in the novel, who really surrenders to the stories and listens so intently with such an engaged heart that they speak to her as they won't to the writer, who has sort of not been able to listen in that fresh, clean windshield kind of way.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the character of Filomena? Because she was also one of my favorite characters to follow in this novel. Such a complex person who had so much of bubbling beneath the surface that many people around her didn't always get to see.
Filomena is one of the characters in the barrio where Ama, a.k.a. Scheherazade, she's chosen a pen name because of a family flack about her writing. Filomena is in the surrounding barrio, one of the curious inhabitants wondering what is going on, what is getting built there. And she ultimately becomes the caretaker there because she is such a wonderful, engaged listener, as I said. And for me, she is almost like the incarnation of who the novel is dedicated to. It's dedicated to anonymous, those little anonymous, invisible people that fade into the backgrounds of our lives that we think are just flat characters that don't have interesting lives. And they are full of stories. All of us live in the cemetery of untold stories in the sense that all around us, there are these people. Many of them we don't know. Many of them we ignore out of our focus and need to get things done. And they are amazingly rich human beings. So she, Filomena, becomes very central to the story because that richness that nobody suspected gets pulled and expressed by listening to the stories in the Cemetery of Untold Stories. And we learn her story.
Mm. Well, you brought up the main character's pen name. I want to ask you a couple questions about that in just a moment. But first, let me share an email we just received from a listener named Cliff in Bristol. And if you have a comment for Julia Alvarez, perhaps a question for her, or want to tell us about your favorite book, you can email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org or call 800-639-2211. Now, Cliff says, a number of years ago, my partner and I had one of our best vacations by taking all of Julia's books with us to read on the beach in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, wow.
That's a big suitcase.
Yeah. And not only that, you know, it's not the kind of beach read that I normally see. if anybody at all is reading in the Dominican Republic on a beach, but I'm very, very honored.
Well, I read in an interview, I believe it was VT Digger from a while back, you said that, quoting here, people think I should be in Miami or in the Southwest, but I can't think of a more Dominican state than Vermont. Why is that? Do you still believe that?
Absolutely, I believe that. I've lived here longer than I have in my homeland. I still call my homeland because of my roots, my ancestors, my traditions of the Dominican Republic. But I love Vermont, and Vermont is still basically a rural kind of state, which reminds me of my childhood Dominican Republic. It's still, because it's rural, it's hands-on. It's not the big buzz and noise and overwhelmingness of the cities. People are in touch with the rhythms of life and the rhythms of each other's lives, births and deaths and who had a baby and who's getting married. And if something happens on your road, everybody's there with a casserole or or whatever. There's that connection and integration and power of community and power of stories, because wherever there's communities, wherever there are people, there are stories. And I love that about the state. And it very much, except for weather, I admit, reminds me of the Dominican Republic, especially the Dominican Republic of my childhood. Hmm.
You have a passage, if you don't mind, I'll read it now, from The Cemetery of Untold Stories, early on in the book, where Alma, the main character, is talking about her decision to move back to the Dominican Republic from Vermont. I'm quoting here. "She began to toy with the idea of returning to the island. After all these years, she still thought of it as home. As young women, Alma and her sisters often spoke of their dear DR as a kind of emergency cord, like the ones they'd encountered in subways as new immigrants in Nueva York. If all else failed, their marriages, careers, their medicated peace of mind, they could always go back. Maybe the time had come to bail. Ending up where she began would indeed give her a pleasing symmetry." First, it's just such funny writing, at the same time as it being so moving. Do you still think of the DR as an emergency card? Do you? Or is this Alma, separate from Julia Alvarez speaking?
Oh, you know, I think with characters, anybody's characters, even if the fiction seems totally invented, that our stories have the DNA of their authors, you know, and their preoccupations and their observations, even if assigned to another character. But definitely there's the pull of your roots for any of us as we age and as we think of going back, if only metaphorically, if we have other plans for cremation and so forth, of going back to our roots, to the soil, to the earth. And so I think there's that yearning for where we began, that kind of closing of the circle. And I do sometimes dream of that, but my heart would be broken if I had to also leave Vermont. It's interestingly, my husband, Bill Eichner, would leave in a minute. and he grew up in Nebraska, for heaven's sakes. But he thinks of it as his homeland. I do. There is that yearning. I think we all experience that need for connection to where we began, maybe as a child or whatever gave birth to a meaningful us.
Mm. Our number is 800-639-2211. We're speaking with the author, Julia Alvarez. Now, you often use Spanish words and phrases in your writing, and your characters are often bilingual. And one of your characters in this book has a passage, I won't read the whole thing again, but has a passage in which she talks about idioms. A certain idiom, a piece of work, doesn't sit right with her. And she says that English wasn't her original language. Its root systems didn't go deep enough in her psyche, a troubling thought for a writer. Mm-hmm. Is that how you feel about English? How deep do its roots go in your psyche?
Well, in a slight variation from Alma's conclusion, I think that my root system in English has connected with my root system in Spanish. And the way that I understand my English, listen to it, I've put the possessive in front of it. My English is that that I am often speaking my Spanish in English or through English. And what I mean by this is that my cadences, my sense of syntax, my choice of vocabulary, my occasional slipping in a phrase in Spanish that I can only get across in that language, but within context, even a monolingual English reader can learn it. So I think it's just that this is the wonderful thing, I think, about American English, that it is a mongrel tongue. It has porous absorption of other languages. immigrants that came into English and infused their cadences, their traditions, their syntax, their vocabularies into English. And I think that's why Walt Whitman called it English, American English, a barbaric yak, yawk, Y-A-W-K, because it's got that organic, slightly feral, always expansive feel about it. So I think American English, bless his heart, like the country, or as a good example for the country that sometimes wants to leave the latest wave of immigrants out, languages are porous, and they take it in, and they find their own ways of using it.
What language do you dream in?
People always ask me that. Hmm. Like, they're going to catch me. Oh, there's the litmus test. Well, I always say, if I'm dreaming of Papi, he comes to me in Spanish. If I'm dreaming of my chairman from when I was in the English department, of course he would be speaking to me in English. I don't have a border wall. As I said, languages are porous, like the waves that come in on the shore, ragged, tide is out, tide is in, it varies. And so the same with languages, they flow into each other, especially in those liminal spaces where they come together in a specific author. And I say this, even if you aren't, say, a writer with another native tongue, maybe you learned... maybe your English comes from the South, or it comes from the Midwest, or it comes from the Southwest, that you have, your Englishes are all different, you know. And if you develop the ear for them, and Filomena would be good at this, if you listen closely, they are different languages, but they all enrich this American English that we all claim. And I understand, and you can correct me, Michaela, that in the past, broadcasters, people in media were taught to sound, to have a standard sound. Mm. And I don't know what the standard sound was, but that must have been pretty tough to divest yourself of your root system in order to be on the radio or on TV. Mm. Was it true?
It was true. Kind of a standard mid-Atlantic English was preferred. God, we seem to be moving away from that now, right, more and more. Now, Julia, earlier in our conversation, you mentioned that the main character in your new novel, Alma Cruz, uses a pen name, Scheherazade, which is borrowed from the name of the storyteller in 1001 Nights, which is a collection of folk tales written in Arabic. Why did you choose this name for her? And why does she have a pen name at all?
Well, the pen name, maybe I alluded to it, is suggested by a writer friend when Alma experiences a lot of flack from her familia, especially her mommy, somewhat from her sisters, for being a storyteller. Because although I bragged and boasted about the rich oral storytelling of my childhood, it was always done in the context of a dictatorship, and it was within a family. Stories were considered dangerous to tell because you could be disappeared. So if you told the wrong kind of story, so it was very much entre familia, within a family. And so when Alma starts publishing, her family is distraught at her having this public voice. And so her writer friend says, big deal, just change your name. You're always talking about that writer, Scheherazade. Why don't you use that? And Alma's first response is, but no one will be able to spell it, which is probably true. And Scheherazade for me, and I know that I've written about this before, was the only storybook that I remember reading, not a story heard in my childhood, was The Arabian Nights. And Scheherazade is at the center of that. Here was a girl, because she was depicted as a girl in my storybook, who told stories and saved all the women in her kingdom with her storytelling, converted the Sultan from a cruel, misogynist dictator into a loving and repentant man, and saved her own life. So even as a child, I thought, wow, what kind of I didn't know stories had that kind of power. So she's always been my first muse, Scheherazade of the Arabian Nights, a classic storyteller from an oral culture, another culture. And so it seemed like Amma, too, would want that kind of name as she took it into her writing life, her public life.
And you had a copy of that book growing up?
Oh, yes. It was the only auntie who read, and she was considered an old maid, a hamona, because she was a reader. And my abuelita would say, one man is going to want to marry a woman whose nose is always between the covers of a book, which didn't make reading very appealing to me. But she did give me this storybook, and I was blown away. I loved the story she told, and I loved the whole concept of a heroine storyteller.
Mm. Well, since we're talking here about who gets to tell whose stories and under what name, I do want to ask you about some of the controversy that surrounded the novel American Dirt, which came out a few years ago. Some of our listeners might remember this novel. It came out in 2020. It's about a Mexican woman who flees violence with her son. They go to the United States. It's a harrowing journey. It was written by Janine Cummins, who identifies as white and Latina, but isn't an immigrant or of Mexican heritage. And the book was a huge hit until it wasn't. It was in the middle of a huge firestorm. You blurbed the book and called it riveting and a dazzling accomplishment. I'm curious if you knew of Cummins's cultural background when you read the book, and if not, if you think that would have changed how you approach the material.
I thought she was a Latina, and in the letter, or maybe afterward, that came, it mentioned that she was married to an undocumented immigrant, recently documented. I think that I'm being accurate there, but it was an Irish immigrant, because it happens all around. It's not just a certain demographic that that is undocumented in this country. So I did have that context, but what I really appreciated about the book is that it incarnated the experience of crossing across the desert and being in that situation from a female point of view, a female body point of view, and a mother. And I found it very convincing, and it engaged me. Since I'm not Mexican, even though everyone sometimes assumes that all Latinos share a common culture, I didn't know any particularities that my Mexican-American friends would point out weren't accurate and were a kind of flattening of something that a Mexican or a Mexican-American would know. I didn't get those little bumps. And I'm not reneging and won't on my experience of reading the book. And what alarmed me, there's several issues at play here. First of all, can we write about an experience that is not our own? I mean, stories don't observe from the beginning, upset those kinds of borders and boundaries. Everybody in their story bunker. No. But what they do demand is accuracy and respect and thorough, thorough research. If we eliminate that you can't write about any experience that you haven't experienced, there goes literature. Or a lot of it. So I don't go with that absolutism, but I do think that in this, shall I call it, complicated and tricky cultural moment, we have to be respectful and have that Filomena quality of good, compassionate, engaged listening. And that's the way we should approach any story, even if it's from our own experience. What I didn't appreciate with the fallout after American Dirt was that it just got so mean-spirited and ferocious, this canceling, cultural canceling that can happen. And I don't want to live in a world where that's the way we treat each other as writers and storytellers, as human beings. And nobody was asking what is happening to Jeanine Cummings. And so that's, you know, I reached out to her afterwards to say, you know, just keep writing. This too shall pass, you know, because I think it can be brutal and devastating for a writer to experience that. And if I fault anyone, and I think judging and faulting is part of the problem, it would be publishers that select one representative writer to serve as the star and the ultimate voice of this culture or this demographic. And that's, you know, Adichie has talked about that in a TED talk, the danger of a single story. And I think it is a danger. And the outcry, in fact, was pinpointing a certain lack of representation in the literature, in the publishing houses, among every, from editor to publicist, you know, that people feel that and notice it. And therefore, maybe it accounts for some of the ignorance that creates that danger of a single story. That's a long answer, but it's so complicated. You know, that's the thing. Nuance never, you know, in a cancel culture moment like that, nuance is lost. You're us or them. And I don't want to live in that world.
I'm curious, this might be a stretch, but I am curious if your decision to have your main character in The Cemetery of Untold Stories, Alma Cruz, use a pseudonym from another culture, Scheherazade, if that decision was at all related to the conversations and the deep thought that you've had around culture and the right to tell stories that came out of this moment, that came out of American Dirt.
I'm not sure, Michaela, what you're asking, if choosing her had something to do with it.
It was just striking to me that the main character in this novel, Alma Cruz, chose that name, Scheherazade, from A Thousand and One Nights, using a Arabic name on her stories. I just thought,
oh, my goodness, I never even thought of that.
Again, it might have been a stretch.
That I might be calling down a firestorm on my head.
No.
I mean, it was just, it really was a sense of, I don't know, of admiration and a deep bow to my first muse. And that was how I made that choice. It wasn't a politicized choice by any means, except as in any, you know, a story like the one of Scheherazade is really about how politics and storytelling are very much combined. They're very much in relation to each other. So I didn't even consider that would be an issue for some.
I raise it not as an issue, more as simply I think one of the many ways in which you weave together cultures and weave together even individual storytellers in your work to kind of make this mosaic.
Well, I think that's the wonderful things that a story does. It's a weaving of different characters and points of views and different imagery, depending on who's telling the story at that moment. And that kind of richness creates, we bring our individual traditions and tribes into the big circle of storytelling. So we're bringing that into the whole, but the whole also circulates back into us. And we are changed by being part of a community of storytellers. We don't just change it, say.
Well, I'd like to wrap up our conversation here with a look towards the future. Now, your main character, Alma, she's getting on in years, but she's also starting a new life for herself. What opportunities for newness are you finding in your own life right now?
Oh, my goodness. The newness that comes every day by realizing that how precious and limited the time is. It's not going to be a ton of sunsets anymore. It's not going to be, hundreds of this or that. And so there's a kind of newness and freshness that comes with a sense of the closing, say, the closing chapters of a life. Even if it's not imminent, something, illness or something is haunting you. I think there's that. And there's a little bit more, I don't know why I say this, because I seem to now be in the thick of a book tour and too busy for words, for literally for writing even. But I think there's a slowing down that allows you the luxury of noticing and of listening and of indulging your curiosities. So I don't think it's that you close down and it's all over. There's just a new eyes. What a metaphor for someone who has been experiencing issues with her vision. New eyes with which you see the world. And I think the realization of that it's limited is a bracing and helpful attitude to make us maybe appreciate what is in our lives.
Julia Alvarez, her latest book is The Cemetery of Untold Stories. It's available from your local bookseller and online. Now, Julia, it's been such an honor to speak with you. I hope to count myself as one of your biggest fans. I sure think I am. I know you have many other fans out there, but thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Michaela. And of course, you and Cliff are invited to the at least imagined Dominican Republic to visit the Cemetery of Untold Stories. Who knows what you might hear there?
Well, bring my suitcase of books, just like Cliff did. Yeah. Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you.